after everything that I've been through, I bounce back. I bounce back and I don't embrace the things that I can no longer do, but I embrace the things that I can do.
Hello, aunties, and welcome to another episode of the Auntie Hour. This is our time, and today we are speaking with Miss Amma Thomas. She has a story that is, I'm pretty sure that you're going to experience a gambit of emotions as you listen to what's happened to Miss Thomas, because this is a reflection of what's happening in this country as it relates to healthcare, in general, healthcare for aging people, healthcare for people with disabilities. It is astonishing how poorly managed and how disgusting, to be frank, the services that are afforded our older people, our disabled people are. I would like to welcome Ms. Thomas to the Auntie Hour. Thank you for coming and thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for inviting me to come on your platform and to tell my story, because even though I'm not still in the nursing home, I still wonder what is happening to the people who don't have a voice. In April of 2021, I suffered a massive stroke. And while I was at the hospital, they didn't think that I was going to make it. They thought they were going to have to put a feeding tube in me. And defying all odds, I started eating on my own. And then they decided that because my whole right side was paralyzed, that I had to go into a nursing home. So, you know, they gave me a paper, and the nursing home that I was used to, I didn't have any vacancies because this was right, you know, in the middle of COVID. So right. I went to a nursing home, and looking on the outside of it, when they was wheeling me in, I was like, whoa, this is a nice place. Well, little did I know that looks can be very, very deceiving. So I went in, and at first I was on a quarantine floor for 14 days and nobody could visit me or anything. And then finally I got out of quarantine. I went into a regular room.
Right.
And then finally I got COVID.
Mm-hmm. So wait a minute, had you on a quarantine floor and you didn't have COVID?
No, when you first came in, they put you on a quarantine floor for 14 days. So okay. Then I was on the, when I first got there, I was on the floor with people who hadn't had the COVID shot, because I hadn't had my COVID shot yet. So I was waiting to have it, my COVID shot. Then after I had my COVID shot and everything, I got COVID, and I was sick as a dog for a week, and I'm telling them, I think I have COVID, please test me for COVID, and then they're saying, oh, she's over-exaggerating, she just don't want to go to physical therapy, so that's why she's saying that she don't feel well. Meanwhile, I'm sweating, I have a high temperature, and they're saying that, I said, I'm a grown woman. If I don't want to go to physical therapy, I'm not in kindergarten that I'm going to make up a sickness. I'm going to tell you I'm not going.
Right.
I'm not. I said, I'm telling. And then when two of the nurses' aides was talking, I guess they thought I was asleep or whatever. And they was like, two of the nurses that worked closely with me had COVID. And they knew they had COVID, so they knew I had COVID, but then they still, and then they didn't test everybody, and the man went to the hospital, and he had COVID, and then whatever New York State rules are, they had that. So then they're going to tell my sister that they just randomly checked people and I came out positive. No, they checked me because for a whole week. And then once they put me back in quarantine again, they sent someone to do that new therapy where they put the IV in and everything. I refused it. I said, no, I'm not sick now. When I was feeling the symptoms, not feeling well, shivering, sick, y'all thought I was over-exaggerating. So I was like, no, I'm not taking it. So the lady was like, well, you have to take it because they called me all the way here. And, you know, I guess she had a certain amount of patients that she had to stick with that needle. And I was like, no, I'm not taking it because y'all should have gave it to me before. So then I stayed on the quarantine floor. I had my own room. I was as happy as could be. I was teaching my Bible study class. I was happy, happy, happy by myself.
Right. And
then one day, they never tell you anything. Like, they never tell you tomorrow we're going to move you or whatever. They just come to your room like you're a prisoner and say, so-and-so's going to help you gather up your stuff. You're moving today. And you're like, wow. Then the food situation. I'm allergic to mushrooms. They have the note that I'm allergic to mushrooms, that I have allergic reaction when I get mushrooms. So one day, they bought soup, vegetable soup. I usually eat the vegetable soup. It don't have mushrooms in it.
Right.
So this time, it had mushrooms in it. So I had already eaten the soup, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is mushroom. So instead of the man in the kitchen saying, oh, I'm sorry, or what, find out was there mushrooms in the soup, the first thing he said was, she's a liar. I was like, I'm a liar? Like, what? Why would I? I'm a grown woman. Why would I lie and say you gave me mushrooms and you didn't? And the nurse is holding the bowl with the mushroom in it, but you refuse to look at it, but you're calling me a liar, but she's holding the mushroom. And then the next day, when my sister and everybody called again, and what, why they were upset with me is because, excuse me, because if I'm going to fight City Hall, I'm going to call people. I went on Facebook, and I was making Facebook Lives. I was like, one day, our aide was in my room. So another aide came to her and said, oh, they're moving me to the fifth floor. And she said, oh, if they move you to, and then that was going to leave her on the floor by herself. And right in front of me, she said, oh, if they move me, that means Alma's not going to get done. I was like, okay. So then finally the shift was over. Nobody came back. So the nurse tried to lie and say she came in my room. And then my friend, who's a shop steward for our job, she came and she was like, okay, if you came into our room so many times, show me the tape. Y'all have a tape that should be running, so I should see you going in her room. I said that she never came in my room. For 72 hours, I wasn't changed. When my regular aide came, I was soaking wet, and they tried to make her say that I wasn't wet when she came. And she was like, I'm not going to lie. She was in her own soiled bed when I came, nobody changed her. And then when I went on Facebook and I was like, okay, this now has been two shifts and I'm not changed. So I went on Facebook and all my friends started calling and saying, you know, Minister Alma needs to be changed. Minister Alma needs to be changed. So they were calling. And then a lady comes to me and she was like, I fear for my life because all your friends are calling and they're threatening me. I said, first of all, I don't have no thug friends. They said to you that I need to be changed. And she was like, what kind of Christian are you that you went on Facebook? I said, where in the Ten Commandments in the Bible it says I cannot go on Facebook and tell the truth? I'm right. Telling the truth. If I was lying, so the first time I went on Facebook, the administration came up and they tried to be nice and they were like, oh, can you please take it down? So the first time I took it down, the second time I refused. I said, no, I'm not taking it down. I'm letting the whole world see how y'all are treating your patients. I've put a picture of a banana on there. The whole banana was brown. And I told people, would you feed this to your mama? And they was like, no, that's disgusting. What is that? And they was like, can you please take that down? I was like, no. Nope. So the man that was right across the hall from me, he was crying out like, you know, help, help, help. And then they were saying, oh, he's always calling or whatever. When his family finally came, that man was near death. That his family took him out of there and didn't bring him back because he was almost dead when they came. And he was calling for help and people were saying that he was just playing.
So and they ignore. I want to make sure I understand you because this is horrible. So a person is crying for help and they just ignored him.
They just ignored
his cries for help. And he ended up having a serious medical situation that almost cost him his life.
Right. And my roommate, the one roommate that I did get along with, she was having a heart attack. And she told a nurse that was on duty, she was like, I really don't feel well. I know my body. And once again, she was another person that they said, oh, she's exaggerating because she doesn't want to go to physical therapy. And this was a lady who was paying out of her pocket. So why would you pay $800 a day for physical therapy? But she's saying, I'm in so much pain, I can't do the physical therapy. And then she told them to call an ambulance one night. And then the nurse came in, and I guess she was on some kind of depression medicine. So the nurse was just like, just give her her meds, just give her her meds. So she refused to go to sleep. She took her, and she was like, I just don't feel right. So she called the ambulance herself, and they took her, and she was gone for a week. So she's exaggerating. Why did the hospital keep her for a week and said she had something that was happening with her heart, but y'all ignored her and tried to get her to go to sleep? And
she probably would not have woke up.
No. And it was, they were, that's really, I can just tell you story out of story. They had, you know, if you're a facility, you should have something in place when the water goes off. Like, you should have wipes and stuff. Not, they wanted the nurses' aides to wash us up in dirty, cold water. I mean, the water looked worse than Flint, Michigan. That my daughter brought me water up there because the water was brown. And whenever the water went off and came back on, it was dirty brown, like dirt brown. And then they would say, well, we have, one lady came in, I was like, why, when the water goes off, y'all don't have anything in place? I know something can happen and the water goes off, but why don't you have wipes? Why do you want them? It's the dead of winter to wash us up in cold water. That's cruel and unusual punishment. And I usually tell them, like, you know, I don't want to be washed up in any cold water. So my daughter would bring me wipes and stuff for when the water went off. And the nurses, they was like, they don't tell us when they're cutting the water off, because if they told us, we would gather up some in buckets or something. At least we'd have lukewarm water to wash up with. Right. And I said, so tell me again, where those wipes at? So once the water went off, I was like, okay, where the wipes at? So I called the nurse in charge. I was like, excuse me, the water is off. Where's those wipes at that you was telling me about? And she was like, I'll get right back to you. She ain't got back to me yet. Administrator of Park Avenue, she's a piece of work. She came to my room and I had my phone on my table like that. So she was like, oh, can we talk to you a minute? She had the nerve to check my phone to see if my phone was on, see if I was recording her.
She touched your property.
Yes. And I was like, I told you I wasn't on my phone. She was like, oh, because you're always on your phone. Okay, but it's my phone. What is it?
It's your business. It's your phone. You're a grown person. And that's what I observe. My observations are that for some reason, once you go into one of these facilities, the idea that you're a human being and that you're an adult that can actually think for yourself, they start to treat you as though you're not.
Right. And let you, they want to make you think that you are crazy. Like when the nurses would give me my medicine, I know that I didn't take my medicine. And I would tell the next nurse, I was like, oh, no nurse came. I didn't take my medicine. And she was like, well, she wrote down that she gave it to you. I said, but she didn't give it to me. And in the morning, when the morning nurse would come, she would say, oh, I know y'all didn't get your medicines last night because everybody's blood pressure is up. And then I called again to the nurse in charge and said, wait a minute. I said, I'm not getting my medication in a timely fashion. I'm here because I had a stroke caused by high blood pressure. So I have to regulate my blood pressure. You have to give me my pills in a timely fashion. So they were like, well, we got a 2-hour time frame to give you your medicine. I said, well, 2 hours from when? Because you don't have a time that you give it. So you can tell me at 2:30 you can give it, and you were supposed to give it at 12. I was like, it's no set time that you're giving me my medication. So what are you talking about that it's a 2-hour window? And they was like, well, she said she gave it to you. I said, well, she's not telling the truth. I was like, why would I want high blood pressure pills? I can't get high off of high blood pressure pills. Right. So why would I want you to give me my high blood pressure pills? Then they would get mad because I was like, what are y'all doing to the people who can't talk? Do you ever give them their high blood pressure medicine? I was like, what are you doing for the people who can't talk?
What's supposed to happen, they're supposed to be keeping records of each time they administer medication, what time they change a person, what time they turn a person. And I can tell you, I was in a facility myself that went out there in Far Rockaway. They sent me to that one in Far Rockaway. I want to say that was 2010. 2010, I was in a facility there. So I know exactly what you're saying is the truth. I've seen it and witnessed it myself. I was in that place out there in Far Rockaway. First of all, they primarily had bariatric patients. So what I needed with my injury for my back, they really didn't have anybody there that supervised that sort of treatment and that sort of PT. But they were trying to get me to do PT. The hospital, that's another story. That's a whole nother story. They sent all the way out there with the injury that I had, knowing that it couldn't, that physical therapy wasn't going to benefit me, and that I needed to have surgery to fix this problem. They sent me out there, and I'm going to tell you, I had a roommate that had dementia that would just cry, and she would go from crying all the time to talking about her husband to just, you know, all over the place. I could smell her, you know, her bodily fluids and herself. I would ring the bell for her to have them come and change. They wouldn't come. They wouldn't come. They were supposed to be helping me get up and out of bed because of the injury I had. And thank goodness I was able to help and get myself to the toilet and help and get myself food, because there was no one that they didn't do what they were supposed to do. I mean, I literally broke out of that place. I broke out. I called my sister Lisa. What's up, Lisa? I called my sister Lisa and told her to pull her car up in front of that place. And I rolled myself in the wheelchair down to her car and got in it. I just up and left because they were trying that same thing that they were telling you. about leaving, that I needed care and I needed this. And I was saying to myself, y'all ain't helping me. I'm getting up out of the bed on my own and transfer to go to the bathroom. I would transfer myself to the wheelchair. I would roll the wheelchair into the bathroom. I would use the bathroom. I would do all this myself. Dangerous, but I did it because I'm ringing the bell. Y'all not coming.
Right. They're not showing up. They don't come.
And they like to blame on being short-staffed. They like to blame everything on being short-staffed. And that may be true. But, you know, look at how you treat people when you hire them. Why would anybody want to work with you? Your good people that come in there, they run them in the ground.
Right. That is so true.
The good people that come in there that work, they run those good people in the ground. They run those nurses in the ground. They run those CNAs to the ground. They don't treat them right. Why should they stay there?
Right. They don't. That's another thing that you see, that they yelling and screaming. If you saw the way that she treated the patients, she treated the workers even worse. And okay, if you're short staffed and you have people willing to work, why don't you give them incentives to work? Nobody don't want no candy bar. They want some money. You know?
Give them incentives and treat them decent. You have good people that come to these places to work, and their whole morale gets turned around being in those places.
One aide that was really, really, I mean, good. God sent it to me because I wasn't supposed to have her when I moved to my single room. But she said, you know, these people ain't washing you up. And I used to make jokes with her like she washed me up like a car wash. But the reason why my skin didn't break down and I didn't get bed sores, when she went on vacation or she was on her days off, the care was terrible. But when the days that she was there, I mean, she used to comb my hair. She used to wash my hair. She was an African woman. She was like, I usually don't braid nobody's hair at work, but she braided my hair for me. So I did have some good workers. There were some very, very good workers, but they were getting disillusioned and with everything. Like they was, when they didn't have enough linen and stuff like that, they was like, we don't have anything to work with. How do you expect us to work? And we don't have anything to work with. So there are some people that care, but then there's some people that just come there for a paycheck. And it seems like the people who administrators like those kind of people who just come to work and don't do their job and mistreat the patient and the state that's supposed to be watching. I don't know if these people knew when the state was coming, because the time that the state was coming, they would have the maintenance workers fixing beds and running around like chickens without their head. And they would know when the state is coming. So it's just like, if somebody was going to rob your house, they would knock on your door and say, excuse me, but I'm going to rob your house at 8 o'clock tonight. And you're going to be sitting there saying, go to bed. You're going to go to bed. And the man said he's going to rob you at 8. 7:30, you go to bed. No, you're going to be prepared for the robber. You're going to have the police there. You're going to have something. But you're not just going to be sitting. And that's what happens. If you tell these people when you come in, then they fix up everything nice. All the rules that they had, they put all the rules in effect. And they just perfect. They give them 5 stars. And I'm like, how did this place get 5 stars? I said, I would give this place 0 stars. Like, not one.
I've also seen that they miraculously have a full staff.
Yes.
Also, I've seen that happen too. They must know when they're coming. And what they should do is pop up on these people when they're not expecting anyone. But they don't. They must know when they're coming. Tell me something. So where are you originally from?
I was born in Mississippi, but I've been in New York on Long Island since I was 3 years old.
Since you were 3 years old.
Yeah.
And what are some of the things that you said you worked in a daycare? You shared a couple of things with me in a message about some of the other journeys that you've had.
I had a lot of bad chapters in my life. In 2009, my son passed away from a heart condition. And now everything that happens to me in life, I compare it to that. I was like, if I survived that, I survived them putting dirt on my son and never seeing him again, then everything else is minor that I'm going through. Just like after my son passed away, I had to get therapy because he died in February and April was his birthday. And I poured a whole bunch of pills in my hand and I was like, I'm going to go see my baby today. And a still voice said to me, if you do it, you'll never see him again. And I put those pills back. And that's the day that I decided to live and not just survive. So after that, everything that came my way, I was like that clown that's at the carnival. You know, the one that you throw the ball at and it goes all the way down.
Yeah.
But then when you turn your head, it bounced back up again. Well, that's they put something in that clown that makes it bounce back. Well, God put something in me, which I call the bounce back spirit. After everything that I've been through, I bounce back. I bounce back and I don't embrace the things that I can no longer do, but I embrace the things that I can do. And people that had a stroke as massive as I did, they lose their cognitive skills. They lose their speech skills. But I never lost my cognitive skills. And my speech skills was like a week or two. And then I could talk. And I was like, okay, God, you put me in this wilderness experience for something, for some lesson to be learned. And I was like, I can't give up. That I still have purpose inside of me and I don't want to die with my purpose inside of me. And when my son passed away, I was in a dark place for a while. And then I decided, I was like, okay, I'm going to start a scholarship in his honor because my son loved education and he was accepted into a pre-law program when he passed away. And, So I began to give out scholarships out of my own money. My family and friends would, you know, give money and however much we raised, that's how many scholarships. So as for the last 2 years, I'm really for the last 1 year, because the year I was in the hospital, we still gave the scholarship because we had raised the money by April. So
what is the name of the scholarship?
Tyce Thomas Friends and Family Scholarship. So my son's name was Tyce, and I was like, what a perfect way to keep his legacy going, because he loved education, he loved learning, that he was resilient, that he didn't let having a single mom stop him from achieving his dream. So I just wanted to help the boys who wanted to go to college with their books or their transportation, or, you know, whatever little thing they needed, depending on how much money we raised. So that turned my pain into my passion. And then with the stroke, just seeing how I was treated. And like I said, I had a voice and I have a family who would come see me. I have a daughter who would take the train once a week to make sure I had the things that I needed. She made sure that I had money on DoorDash if I needed to order any food or whatever. But everybody don't have that.
What are your plans now? So now you're home, you're getting better, and I can tell you're feisty. You have some plans to do something. I know it.
Right. Well, right now, I wrote another book, Surviving a Stroke Against All Odds, and it came with a healing journey journal, the scriptures that I used while I was going through. And I really want to be an advocate for the elderly, because it's like the elderly are thrown away in these nursing homes, and because the majority of them can't vote, it's like you're not important to the government because you can't vote no more. You can't get to the polling place. So I want to be a voice for the voiceless, the ones who can't speak for themselves. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm just advocating my book and some t-shirts to go with it. So, you know, that's what I'm doing.
So we'll provide everyone with the information on where they can get the t-shirts. I believe you said the book is still being edited, right?
It's with the editor.
Once you get that info, make sure that you send it to us here.
I will.
And also, where can people donate to the foundation, to the scholarship fund?
I'm going to set it up on my website.
All right. And your website is?
Bidley Arthur Alma. That's it. Bidley Arthur. You type that in, it comes. Yeah. Okay.
All right. All right. Well, thank you for coming here and telling your story. I want you to come back, because that's what advocacy is about. You're going to have to be on top of these people. So I'm sure you'll have more stories to share. Start trying to get out and help people. There are going to be more people that need someone to hear their story. And you're welcome to come here anytime and share those stories with our audience.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on your platform to share my story. And hopefully, if it makes a difference in one person's life, then my living won't be in vain.
Oh, that's perfect way to say goodbye. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.